Good grief. Question everything. Why?
Welcome. You're listening to Why, a Good Grief Network podcast with Amy Lewis Rowe and Laura Schmidt. We're excited to be back recording for Why, a Good Grief Network podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
So Amy and I took some time off, as you might be aware if you're a listener. We had some traveling at the end of June. We got to see some friends get engaged up at Grand Teton National Park, and it was absolutely beautiful.
Congratulations to Brooke and Caitlin.
And today Amy and I want to talk a little bit about human limitations, the limitations that we face because we're human beings. And not just human beings in general, but human beings who are trying to do something in the world. Recently, a few situations have happened that make me more mindful that as much work as I do and continue to try to do every day, there's still so much more that I need to be doing to better myself and to continue to try to be the best version of myself that I can be.
Well, and the fact that you said that you need to be doing is interesting, right? Because what is progress? It's an improvement from where you were, and yet do we ever get to the point in life where we don't have to have any progress or there's no more progress left to be made? Because I don't think that we do. And so need to make is interesting because it's more of a want to make.
That's true. Well, and it's easy to fall into the assumption that if I'm doing some self-work, then I already get to present myself how I want myself to be, right? It's kind of vague, but essentially I use the word I need to be doing this because I envision a person that I want to be, the person that I am trying to shape myself into.
So you need to be doing it in order to live the values that you want to uphold.
Yeah. So last week, Amy and I were at Lake Minotaur, which is where we spend a good deal of our time because it's hot, and we bought a season pass to the lake, so we like to go there to cool off, run our dogs, and just hang out and get inspired by the natural world. So I watch dogs on the side to make a little additional income. And we brought this wonderfully nice dog to the beach with us, and I did not leash her because she's very sweet. She's not a threat to anybody. And we like for them to have the opportunity to run around, and typically our dogs stay by us. And usually there aren't many people on the beach. So that being said, unfortunately, the dog ran over to a group of picnickers, and she got so excited that she peed on their picnic. She peed on their blanket. And so, as you might assume, they were not very happy. And they were not very happy with us for not having leashed her. And they packed up their stuff. They had to pass next to us on their way out. They basically were very angry with us and yelling at us about how we needed to leash our dog. I responded in anger, essentially saying, "I'm sorry, it's not even my dog. I knew she was really nice. I didn't think it would be a problem. I'm sorry." And then one of the guys in the party ends by slamming down the handle of one of the bags he's carrying, just to show how angry he is. And a couple hours pass, I'm mulling it over, and I'm chatting with Amy and talking about how my reaction was not the right reaction. It's not the reaction I've been trying to program myself for. I'm incredibly quick to anger, and I allowed my anger to get the best of me. So the woman was angry, the man was angry, they passed their anger on to me, and then I passed it right back to them. So anger seems to breed anger, and it's a really unfortunate and difficult cycle to get stuck in, because I was thinking about how we easily could have eased the situation, you know, when the woman walks over and is very angry, and rightfully so. I mean, nobody likes their picnic to be peed on, no one. She confronts us and says, "You should have leashed your dog." I should have said, "Yes, you're right, I should, I'm sorry, can I get your name and your email or Venmo you $20 or something like that?" I should have approached this situation in a calmer demeanor. Instead, I was worked up because I felt bad. I was feeling shame for not having the dog leashed, for the fact that their picnic's now ruined, and I fought back with anger. Amy and I were talking about how this is a great opportunity for reflection. We put a lot of materials into the world, and by doing our steps, we want to improve who we are as human beings. We practice yoga, we try meditating, I read a lot of books, and my response that day was not congruent with who I want to be. And it's a basic human limitation. I will always use my defaults first. And the thing is that I have to reprogram how I respond, what my initial defaults are.
We're not saying that Laura's anger was the consequence of the woman's anger, because she's responsible for how she responds. And at the same time, how you approach someone will dictate how they respond to you. And so when the woman came over in an accusatory and angry way, again, completely understandable. I'm not that big of a dog person, and if someone's dog peed on my family picnic, I'd be really upset too. That being said, rather than trying to have a dialogue, see if we could make it right, she came over and yelled at us. And that is when Laura got angry back. And then her anger fueled the guys slamming down the cooler. And thankfully, it wasn't any sort of violent altercation, but it didn't feel good for us, and I know it didn't feel good for them either. And so how do you have a conflict that can turn into something where both people walk away feeling better or resolve the issue? Because clearly we couldn't change the mistake we had made, which was misjudging this dog's ability to listen and come back when called. We couldn't change that actual part, but what we could change is how we responded and trying to make it right somehow, to make this family feel important, like we valued their time and their picnic, and like we cared that this dog we were watching affected it. And instead, what it turned into was a bunch of angry people all leaving angry. And there has to be a better way. And that's just a micro example of conflict on a much larger scale and how we interact with one another. And so Laura and I spent the afternoon at the lake talking about this. And what does it mean to respond to something in a way that you don't feel good about? How do you make amends for that? And also, how do you show yourself compassion and love rather than saying, oh, I didn't do what I wanted to do, I should have done this, and obsess on the perfectionistic side? How do we accept our human limitations, and how do we accept them with grace?
Two other important words that I want to bring into the conversation are insight and compassion. And I feel like my response that day, I didn't sink in deep enough to allow compassion or insight to really take over. It was a momentary response. And in some of our other podcasts, we've talked about upstairs and downstairs brain or thinking fast and slow. And I definitely allowed my reactionary brain or my downstairs brain to respond. You know, I didn't give it an additional thought. I didn't let myself cool down. And I think the ultimate goal is to be able to train our minds for when we have conflicts. And as Amy said, this example that we're using is just a small example in the world. What happens when your entire town is bulldozed by a tornado or a fire or a flood? And how do you deal with the conflict of someone putting a gun in your face? How do you deal with the conflict of anything that we could potentially face because of the impacts of climate change and ecocide? We must train our brains to respond with compassion and insight. And that's available to us through thinking slow and through our upper brains.
What I'm focusing on here or wanting to emphasize is perfection is not possible. Not only is it not possible, but it's not required. And so many of us get it in our heads that it is something achievable, and we chastise ourselves when we fall short. And I want us to shift how we think about that. Rather than aspiring for perfection or chastising ourselves when we fall short of our ideals, I want to take our mistakes and think about them as an invitation for deeper connection. Because when we are reminded that we can't live our values, it helps us be more compassionate when other people are not living their values. When I took a class with Terry Tempest Williams, she often said, honor your mistakes as hidden intentions. We have this idea that making a mistake is somehow shameful. And it can certainly feel shameful. I don't want to pretend I'm above that. I've made plenty of mistakes that caused me to feel shame. That being said, the more I learn and the more I grow, the more I see that those mistakes also helped shape my perspective and my perception, sometimes in really fundamental ways. And so rather than sitting there and beating ourselves up, why can we not look at these things and try to take the shame out of it and say, what does this moment have to teach me? Was it a reminder that despite the fact that I meditate and I do yoga and I try to practice self-awareness, that I also lose my temper and I know what that feels like? And therefore, when someone else loses their temper, I can have a dialogue with them about it and hold them accountable and have compassion because I know what it's like to behave in a way that doesn't align with your values. We have to stop thinking in such absolutes. Because someone does something we don't agree with doesn't mean they don't have values. And that's where I like to try to connect with people is, what are your values? Because we get into these boxes of liberal versus conservative versus environmentalist versus humanist versus religious versus atheist. And I just feel like that's an inaccurate way to look at someone. And so I want to hear from someone personally, beyond labels. What do they love? What brings them joy? What are they afraid of? And when we get to those connections, I think that is where real change is made. And so if we can look at mistakes as an invitation for connection, how can they be bad?
And additionally, can we not use our practices of mindfulness and our seeking of compassion and insight as a practice? Like you said, we can never achieve perfection. And so if we change our mindset and realize that it's a practice, we're always practicing. We're practicing our reactions. We're practicing how we embody ourselves here on this planet.
In my yoga classes, I try to remind my students that perfection is not only not possible, but it's a distraction. Aspiring to be perfect will distract you from aspiring to be as best as you can be and as strong as you can be where you are.
And aspiring for perfection makes you feel bad. Both Amy and I are recovering perfectionists, to use a term coined by Brené Brown. Basically, what I'm trying to say is that I think we can find a middle ground between being people pleasers and being perfectionists.
As activists, we often hold ourselves and even each other to standards that are just simply too high. And what I mean by that is we forget our human limitations because we're trying to overcompensate for the fact that we believe everyone needs to be acting in these ways and being an activist for justice, but that's just simply not possible. So we overcompensate by picking on ourselves and each other and saying, we need more, we need more, we need more. And at some point, people burn out. And I'm saying this as someone who's had several mental breakdowns, and by that I mean hospitalized for depression. So I know for a fact what happens when I try to push myself too hard. And yes, we all know those people who continue to push themselves and they don't burn out. You're more at risk of heart attack, cancer, and who knows what other health problems. I want to reframe how we think about mistakes and times that we do not live up to our ideals, rather than being a source of isolation and shame that can later be used against us. I want it to be an invitation for deeper connection.
Connection with whom? Like yourself or other people?
With yourself and others. And with yourself because it reveals where you are at versus where you want to be. And I think true love is seeing someone as they are. And that should be applied to ourselves as well. Or I think it can be. And should is a word I don't like a lot. But I think we can benefit from real, authentic self-love, which requires seeing ourselves as we are rather than who we think we are supposed to be. And so in times where we fall short, rather than beating ourselves up, it's an invitation to look deeper into ourselves, into why we fell short there. And then it also is an invitation to extend that compassion to others.
Because others make mistakes too.
Right.
And so it forms empathy.
Yeah, others make mistakes. It helps us form empathy because even though someone might make a mistake that you just don't understand and you think, I could never do that, and you judge that person and it gives you a sort of self-righteous attitude, at the end of the day, you're going to probably make some sort of mistake that someone else might feel that way about. And so when you find yourself falling short, how do you then use that for when someone else falls short? But how do you use your vulnerability and imperfection? Well, I mean, Brené Brown talks about how vulnerability is the seed of connection, and that is what makes us feel connected and seen. if we can lean into our vulnerability and use it as an invitation to better empathize with others, as well as have deeper compassion for ourselves, I think we can look at it as an opportunity rather than something embarrassing.
On the grander scheme of things, you were saying someone may make a mistake or do an action that you don't condone, nor can you even imagine condoning. And I guess my question for you, Amy, is how do we find empathy in those types of actions? Something like anything Trump's doing right now, stuff that Hitler did, people who are out in the streets holding guns to people's heads or committing rape or something like that. Can we find empathy for those people, and how do we do that?
That's a great question, and I think that I have a seemingly paradoxical answer to that. I believe, yes, we can find empathy for people doing awful things, and that they deserve empathy, because I believe empathy is the seed of compassion and love, and I believe love can change people. That being said, there's no denying that there are individuals who engage in levels of destruction that are just unthinkable, and they seem to have no social conscience or empathy. And I also don't believe that the compassion and forgiveness needs to come from the people they harmed. I think we have this false idea that we tell people and victims of different types of abuse that they should be the bigger person, and that's not their responsibility. I really love the line from Kesha's song Praying, where she says something along the lines of, there are some things only God can forgive. And so even though it's a song where she's saying she hopes her abuser is out there praying and changing, she's also giving herself permission not to forgive him herself. And I think looking at those acts of darkness and knowing yourself allows, maybe you've been personally affected by a certain type of abuse and you just refused to have empathy, compassion, or forgiveness for those type of abusers. And I think that's perfectly fine. I'm by no means asking someone to forgive for something that they, in their human heart, feel incapable of doing. I don't know, I guess this is a topic that then starts to get complicated, because I believe forgiveness helps the person who's doing the forgiving rather than the person being forgiven. That would be an example of needing to accept our human limitations. Our human limitation sometimes does not allow us to forgive someone, and I think we need to know that that's okay, and at the same time, not let that fester into hate where we wish that person harm. I think it's just about setting boundaries and knowing what you can and can't do, and that if your human limitation at that moment is not allowing you to have empathy or love for someone, that's okay, and at the same time, not to lose sight of the fact that that person still deserves empathy and love elsewhere. Because I think when we believe that someone is unworthy of love, that gets into dangerous territory with hate. And hate is what allows us to harm others. And so if you want to be a person who does minimal harm in your life, then it requires at least acknowledging that everyone is worthy of love in some form, even if you're not the person who can give that to them.
In sum, how can we make the times that we don't live up to our ideals, how can we make room for connection and for moments of reflection and for even training our brains to respond through different processes?
We're hoping to encourage others, and including ourselves in this encouragement, to look at times we don't live up to our ideals as an invitation to go deeper into self, into connecting with others.
I'd like to take a second and thank our patrons and everyone who supports us, whether that's through a monetary donation, words of encouragement, or anything of that nature. We are incredibly grateful for the support, and we could not do this without you.
If you like what you hear, you can follow us on iTunes, and you can subscribe so it will alert you weekly when we release our podcasts. If you're interested in what we're doing and are not in a place to donate financially, trust me, we understand. If you could just help us spread the word about what we're doing and share the podcast on your social media pages. And most importantly, have these conversations with your friends, family, and community. If you have any questions you'd like to ask us that we might answer on the show, send us an email at goodgriever@gmail.com.
Thank you for listening to Why, a Good Grief Network podcast, with your hosts, Amy Lewis-Rowe and Laura Schmidt. If you like what you hear, consider subscribing, commenting, leaving feedback, or just checking out our Patreon page. We'll come back at you next week with some more information and some more big questions. Thank you for listening.